Good morning. So those of you who have been around here Sunday after Sunday, this summer, this season of ordinary time that we are in right now, which goes from the day of Ascension all the way until Advent, long season, for the most part, summer into fall, you'll know that we've following Jimmy's leadership, we have identified a theme that we're trying to live into during this season. And what is that theme?
Rewilding,
right? So that term rewilding is actually a term from ecology, right? It's ecological science of bringing back pieces of land which have been heavily influenced by the hand of man, the hand of humanity, places that aren't wild anymore. The idea is bringing back, eradicating non-native species, bringing more native species back in, hopefully introducing some large carnivores like bear and wolves, and large herbivores, perhaps, like bison, trying to bring a particular piece of land back to its native state, its wild state. So we're using that term a little bit differently here, aren't we, in rewilding our spiritual lives, our stories, how we interact with the world and with one another. We've gotten pretty domesticated, I think, in our spirituality, in the way we do church, and so we're sort of trying to move a little bit more toward a more wild and natural way of being Christians in the world. I'm so glad that I went to adult formation, which happens between 9 and 10 after the 8 o'clock service and before this service, because we had a great conversation about, now what is wild and what is feral, right? And I hadn't really thought about, thank you, Laura, I hadn't really thought about that distinction, because I want to make it clear, what we're not encouraging people to do is run amok, right? Which would maybe be a little more on the feral side of things. But to come back to a more free and open and wild way of being in the world, together and with God. I think that 2,000 years of church tradition and theology piled upon theology and explanations and then the Enlightenment and this reliance on reason has really changed, and maybe not always for the better, how we conceptualize God and how we conceptualize, I don't want to say conceptualize, how we behave in the world, right? So now if we want to go and start this rewilding project, I think the place to start is at the beginning. And I mean at the story of Genesis, which we are dropped right into the middle of today with Jacob's story. But when we think about that story of Genesis, I almost called it a book, but it's not a book in the same way that you might go to Valley Bookstore and pick up a book off the shelf. It doesn't have one individual author. It's a collection of stories, mostly oral stories probably to begin with, that have been put together into a cohesive whole. It definitely tells a story, but I have this sense that there's been a lot of scholarship done about the book of Genesis, right? And if you're a Bible nerd like me, it's interesting and kind of fascinating and entirely misses the point, because the point is the story. right? And the story is right there for available to us at a reading. I really kind of feel, though, that how this story should be heard and engaged with is an elder sitting at a campfire with a bunch of sleepy children gathered around her and her telling this story. And I think that those kids are hearing the story in their hearts, and they're probably dreaming the story as they hear it. And I think that's how Genesis could and perhaps should land for us. Clearly, that's not what we're doing here today. There's no campfire in the middle. You may all be sleepy, but most of you aren't kids. But the story of Genesis is so wild and crazy, and we miss that. It's been softened, and it's been layered on with layers of theology and scholarship, but when you get right down to it, it is one crazy story. It starts off with creation, with the Spirit hovering over the deep, and then this description of God bringing forth all of this life into the world, the stars, the moon, the sun, every living thing, and humanity. Like, humanity right in the middle of it. Not above it, not below it, but humanity centered in creation. That's the first few chapters of Genesis. And then things start getting complicated, right? What's the second story? A brother kills a brother. And things kind of go downhill from there for a period of time, right? But the vast majority of the story of Genesis is a story of the generations of people who are God's people. Now, it's also very important to realize that all through Genesis, yes, Abraham's progeny, is that how you say the word? Yeah, progeny, it's their story, the patriarchs and the matriarchs. It's their story, but it is clearly stated many times in this story that this God does not only care for those people. God cares for all of creation and all people. But we have this long saga, right, starting with Abraham and Sarah. Abraham's son, Isaac, who is told to sacrifice one day. Thankfully, God lets him off the hook before he makes him go through with it. Isaac's sons, Jacob and Esau. And so here we are, dropped right into the middle of this story. The story of Genesis, right in the middle, is the story of Jacob. And not only that, we are dropped right into the center of his story today. A lot has happened prior to the day that he wrestled with the man. And that's what it says over and over again. Wrestles with the man on the banks of the Jabbok River. A lot has happened prior to that. We first meet Jacob before he's even born. I don't know of another story quite like this. We meet Jacob when he's in Rebekah's womb, right? And he's not there alone. No, he's in there with his twin brother Esau, and they are wrestling. Things are pretty turbulent in Rebekah's womb, and in fact, they're so turbulent that she says to God, "God, don't know what's going on in here, but I don't like it. You know, if this is what giving birth is going to be, I don't know if I want to have anything to do with this. And God says, because at this time, as the story goes, God was speaking directly to people, right? God tells Rebekah, I'll tell you what's going on in there. You've got two great nations at war in your womb right now, Jacob and Esau. So that's where we first encounter Jacob. At the end of the story of Genesis, the last we see of Jacob is when his children are bringing his mummified body back from Egypt to Canaan, to the promised land, where they lay his bones to rest. A lot happens in between. Now, talk about a wild story. Talk about a crazy story. You know, Christy and I are both movie buffs. And Christy and I always joke, when she goes and sees a movie that she thinks is maybe a little too weird or a little too wild, she always comes to me and she says, Brian, you're going to love this movie. Because I do. I love a wild story. Now, I think many of us share that feeling. But Jacob's story, I wish I had an hour. Don't worry, I'm not going to preach for an hour. But I want to hit a couple of the highlights in Jacob's story. You know, after he's born, grows up, he and Esau grow up. Jacob very cleverly and very deceitfully cheats Esau out of his birthright. They're twins, but Esau came out first, so Esau is the elder. And Jacob figures out a way, with the help of his mom, to get that birthright from Esau. So there's some tension here right away, a lot of tension between the two brothers. And within this little family system, it starts off in a very chaotic fashion. You know, this whole book, this whole last half of the book of Genesis is all a family story. It's family upon family upon family. And I'll tell you what, these people's families make my family look mostly functional. It's always complicated. It's never easy. It's often beautiful. And anyone in here who has a family that they either came from or have one now, which is everybody in here, knows that family systems, family relationships are often beautiful and sometimes really complicated and sometimes really terrible. The story in Genesis is telling us, yes, this is the reality of being human in the world, and God is never not present in all of this family business that we have. God is always there. Jacob goes to the land of his father-in-law, Laban, where he meets Rebekah, gets married. Well, actually, first gets married to Leah, thinking that he's marrying Rebekah. And then a couple of maids are given to him by his wives. Anyway, Jacob ends up with a family of two wives, two maids, 11 kids as we hit the story today. There's a 12th kid on the way, but he's not here yet. So talk about, I can't even call it a blended family. It's more like a scrambled family, right? But those of us who perhaps have blended families or come from blended families can hear the tension in this story that exists in most of our families. So Jacob now, okay, so I'm going to finally get to the reading of today. So here we are, dropped into the middle of the story, in the middle of Genesis, in the middle of Jacob's lives. It's a crux moment in the story. Esau's on the run, Jacob is on the run from Laban, has his whole family, brings them to the Jabbok River. In front, so trouble behind, trouble in front of him too, because Esau is lurking out there. And Jacob thinks that Esau is coming back to seek revenge on him for stealing his birthright. He is in a really hard place. And Jacob has been in a really hard place his whole life, struggling, wrestling perhaps. Comes to the Jabbok River, sends his whole entourage, two wives, two maids, 11 children, camels, goats, everything that meant anything to him. He sends them across the Jabbok River. And perhaps because he thinks they will be safe over there, out of harm's way, and maybe he just needed a break. Maybe he just needed a little Jacob time, right? He hasn't had much of that his whole life. So maybe he's hoping that he can have a moment. No such luck. Because immediately, there's a man wrestling with him. And he wrestles with this man all night long. Now, I was a wrestler in high school. Interestingly, so were Jimmy and Travis. And I don't know if that says something about us now or something about us when we were 15 years old. I don't know, but it's an interesting thing to think about. And I will say this too. Mary has been a wrestler her whole life, right? She didn't wear a singlet and get out on the mat and, you know, do that thing. But Mary is a wrestler in the very best sense of the word. So you got four priests who've done some wrestling in their lives and perhaps continue to. Yeah, so in high school wrestling, a match lasts 6 minutes, 3 2-minute periods. And I can tell you that I have never been as physically and emotionally drained as I was at the end of a 6-minute wrestling match. Jacob wrestles with the man all night long. I can't even imagine what kind of stamina he must have had. Perhaps desperation, because when you're wrestling, you're not only doing your best to pin that other person, you're fighting not to get pinned yourself. And I think that Jacob was probably more on the defensive side of things in this match. He wrestles with the man all night long. And then daybreak comes, or almost daybreak. I think the text said daybreak is coming, so the man says, "Let me go. Daybreak is coming." And Jacob won't let him go, and so the man hits him in the hip, perhaps dislocates his hip, hurts him, and Jacob still won't let go. He's still hanging on, and he says, "I will not let you go until you give me a blessing." And the man gives him a blessing. He gives him a new name. He gives him a new identity. "You're no longer Jacob, now you're Israel," which means, "I have striven with God." Then apparently Jacob lets him go. And the last thing we see in this little scene is Jacob limping away, right? Hurt, injured, but not broken. limping towards his future, limping towards the future of the people of Israel, injured and not broken. Getting sleepy yet? You know, I think that too much explaining just sort of explains a wild story like this away. Rather than being enlightening, it just sort of, I don't want to say cheapens, it just sort of trivializes the story. And yet, what is my job? Probably to try to tease a little bit of meaning out of this. And I can only tell you the meaning that I get from it. I think it could be different for every single one of you in here if you live with this story in your heart a little bit. All life is struggle. No matter how blessed we are, no matter how easy our lives appear on the surface to other people, there is an element of struggle in every person's life. I am convinced of that. And I am convinced that these struggles that we have perhaps come with injury, but they also can come with blessing. And that we may be limping through life, we are blessed. And I know that sometimes, last night for instance, I laid awake most of the night wrestling, struggling. And I'm guessing that some of you have probably had nights like that too, where we're not wrestling with some external force, we're not even wrestling with God, but we're wrestling with the turbulence inside of ourselves. And there is blessing in that too. Just like God would never abandon these crazy, wild, dysfunctional families, God will never abandon me or you or you or you or you. God's grace and love through Jesus are available to every single one of us. So limp on. Amen.